Good morning, everyone. This is Milton Carter with CRI in Dallas, and I believe I just heard someone explaining how to mute, if you need to mute or want to mute yourself so there isn't background noise. Did I gather that's what was happening?
Yes, Mel, this is Tony Stigliano. I've asked them all to *6 it because of that. Then I think that we should have a clear sailing from this point on.
Good. Thank you very much, Tony.
All right, you're on, sir.
I appreciate that. Okay. Well, today is, of course, Friday, November the 16th, and we have a variety of topics to discuss today. But as we kick today's session off, I'd like to go over some areas that Eric touched on last week. This is Milt Carter, CRI in Dallas. And then I want to go into some things pretty deeply. But first of all, last week, Eric touched on benchmarks. Now, all of you have the site that LMI has made you aware of to go to look for the material for the sessions, today's session. We've actually, in addition to the site you have, we've actually created a shorter way into that site, too. So if anybody isn't into the site, you can remember www.mylmi.biz, and that'll take you into the site real quickly. So I'm going to assume that everybody is into the site where the training materials and the discussion materials are, unless you tell me you have a problem getting in there, then I'm going to assume you're all there. Okay. Now, one thing that I wanted to address on this benchmark issue, and even before I do that, let me just remind everyone that if you go to that site, there is a recording from session number one, there's a recording from last week's session, and within a few hours, there'll be a recording from this week's session as well. But I especially want to introduce you to somebody that's going to be, can be potentially very important to you in the future. His name is Steve Burke. He is our technical manager, and he's reachable at 972-641-5494, extension 195. Now, when we talk about technical manager, let me explain to you why you might want to call him or why you might need his help. Number one, if you had a benchmark that you compiled some time back for a company and you couldn't figure out how to put it into the web operation so that you could produce reports from that benchmark, that's one of the reasons you would call Steve, so that he would in fact then help you achieve that. Number two, if you were in the process of doing a benchmark or just and you wanted to put it into that site of yours, that online site, Steve would help you. If you're not familiar with how to access the industrial database of benchmarks that are in the system to produce a report from, he would help you. And if you forgot, fine, to be able to answer the questions about a job description and, as a result, produce a benchmark to put into the system to run a report from, to produce a report from, you'd call Steve. So basically what we're talking about here, and he has people that work for him, but basically those people are what we call the tech service people that assist people in the physical use of our systems. They have nothing to do with anything to do about sales or pricing or anything like that. They are the people who support people in the field who use our systems. Okay. Steve, want to say hello to everybody?
Good morning, everyone.
That's how he sounds. He's been a part of this organization for a number of years, thoroughly knowledgeable and experienced. He's a married guy with a little girl that's running he and his wife.
Absolutely. Excuse me, Milt, can you give us his number again?
972-641-5494, extension 195.
Can you repeat the number, please?
It's 972-641-5494, extension 195.
195?
Correct.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you all a question. And obviously, if you need help in an area, you should address this with him one-on-one. But are there any generalized questions that you want to ask Steve or anything like that before he goes back to the tech support area and I continue on? Okay, Steve, thank you for being here with us today. Now, let me just come back to you and remind you that there are those various methods of putting a benchmark into the system. There are the methods we've talked about before of creating a benchmark. And when you create a benchmark based on people who are successful in a job that you've tested, that is called conducting a concurrent validation study. According to the American Psychological Procedures, there are actually four different methods to do a validation study. And this is, the concurrent method is considered the cream to cream of the different types. But the benchmark system is the most accurate system to use to compare people to, whether they're being compared to in an application process, pre-employment process, or even in the training process. Let me just remind you of this, and I mentioned it earlier on, but we kind of hit you too fast and heavy, I think, sometimes in sessions one and two, but let me just remind you of the case, for example, of the Army National Guard in the state of Florida, whereby they tested their best recruiters who were meeting and exceeding their objectives, set that up as the benchmark, concurrent validation study, then evaluated all the rest of them against that. Then the bottom group were the ones they replaced, the middle group and the top group were the ones that they trained, basically in selling techniques to meet their recruiting objectives. So that's called benchmarking based on the successful people and also a concurrent validation study. Now, I'd like to take this in a little more relaxed manner, and I'd like to ask you at this moment in time to address any questions that you may have in any form or fashion to me about benchmarking. Any questions at all about the benchmarking process? Okay, we have no questions about the benchmarking process. Everybody's cool on that. And you're looking at session number 3, Friday, July the 16th, and we've addressed this issue about how benchmarks are established, and everybody's cool with it. And again, I want to emphasize that this is your time too, and I'm very, very happy to answer questions for you at this moment in time. Since no one has brought any forward to the table, you'll see the next element that is occurring there on the screen that you can see, and it's presenting achiever results. Now, let me begin by saying this. This is a sales world, and we continue to sell, and you should continue to sell in a specific manner that, and there are many different manners, but this is the specific manner that has been considered very successful to us for, gosh, well over 35 years. Point one, the logical thing to do is to make this offer to an employer. Whether you're talking to that employer about pre-employment testing or assessments, or whether you're talking about the use of testing to determine what the training needs are in an organization. So you've got two different arms here. One is from a pre-employment standpoint, and one is from a develop the people you have standpoint. Now, let me just make this comment to you, that considering how the economy is going right now and has been going, and the fact that we're just on the eve of December, we have a lot more concern in businesses today than we had a year ago in meeting the corporate objectives. So meeting the corporate objectives for 2008 is a lot hotter and a lot more of an issue of meeting those corporate objectives in 2008 than it was coming into 2007. Now, so, and we've kind of danced around and talked about our performance management systems, but really, what we really come back to the core of, the core is the achiever. And the achiever in the use of pre-employment or in the training and development or enhancing the performance of the individual is very, very key. So, you address an employer, whether a client of yours or not, with the statement, please allow us to assess two of the people that you currently employ in your organization. We wish to assess two of the people that you know and currently employ in your organization. Our standard fee to do that is, and you state your standard fee, but if when I present these results to you, you do not believe that this system is accurate and to the point, and you don't feel like you're money is worth what our fee is, or my fee is, then I will either not charge you or I will refund the money that you paid for the two people. Now, here is a long-standing offer that we've had and have, and I've spoken with Dave Bird about it and have his blessings to make you aware of it today, and we will stand by it with you as well. You may make that offer across the board all the times that you want to make it. And you must follow our procedure in this process that I'm about to outline in order to be the most effective in carrying the offer through, but also just in case you fall into trouble. And here's what we do. Yes, you will buy the Achiever reports to begin with, and you will use them in your offer. However, if that employer states they're not worth it, I didn't get value for my money, or they're inaccurate, and you write it off, then all you have to do is create an email that says, I tested two people for Jim Beam at Beam Manufacturing, such and such an address, telephone number, and his statement was, these results were inaccurate or not worth the money or whatever his statement was. You have to provide us who you did it for and who said that with contact information, because it always has been and it still is our position that we don't mind issuing a credit for the two achievers. That's not the point. But we want to be able to find out with them why they had the problem, where the issue was. And I have to tell you, I haven't done that once this year so far. Now, last year we did it two or three times. But obviously, we check them very carefully when this comes through. But in essence, what you're really saying is, I'm going to do these two assessments for you. I'm going to present them to you. And if for any reason you don't feel like you got money's worth or they're inaccurate, then I'm not going to charge you for them. I'm going to refund your money, however you operate like that. Now, the second point that's really, really critical in making offers like that, never, ever do it on applicants, because you will fall into the trap of we didn't hire them, or we've got to wait a year and see if they work out, or whatever it is. So the critical issue is that they select existing employees who they know, either two good performers, or a good performer and a poor performer. Obviously, you could do two middle-level performers, but that isn't as significant as where you have, like, two that are really top people, or a good one and a bad one, where you've got differential to prove the difference between the two. So always employees, always people they know, and always under those circumstances. Now then, the next principle in this particular approach is you never, ever, ever, ever mail them their report in one whump and an envelope or whatever just in advance, or email it to them. I mean, that is an absolute no-no. The critical issue is that you move into this process to go through the report with them, and you follow this precisely, whether you do it by telephone or whether you do it in person. And I will tell you, when you present in person, that's the ideal way that it should be presented. When you walk in person, and we're going to click now on presenting the achiever results, the normal distribution.
I'm confused. Where are you looking at? Because it's not coming up my screen.
Okay, on today's material, this is session number 3. It's Friday, November the 16th.
I'm there.
If you're there, and you look and you see presenting achiever results.
Where?
And then you see the normal distribution right under that.
So where is the presenting achiever results?
Okay.
I got it.
Okay, did everybody see this staining system? I'm going to give you a minute.
Does everybody see what?
Okay. Everybody should be looking at the staining system. You see that? Okay. Everybody does it. So you begin with, and you can just go to print this out right now the way it stands, or you can print it out after the fact. And so you've got a sheet then that shows the bell curve, and it shows the staining system. So you can print that out and have that in front of you, so that what you do is you begin by saying, when you walk into that appointment after you've established the rapport and you're ready to present the results, whether by phone or in person. If you're going to do it by phone, email it to them in advance or fax it to them in advance and say, have here with me the achiever results on Richard Schaefer and Steve Burt, and I'm looking forward to presenting them to you. Do you prefer either one of them to be first? If so, honor that request. All right? Now, what I want to do is acquaint you with the scoring system. The scoring system is the German system, the Steiner system. It goes from 1 to 9, and that means that it has the normal distribution of the bell curve of the general population. And so this is the system we're going to be working with. We can see that 23% of the population score 1, 2, 3. We can see 54% score 4, 5, or 6. We can see another 23% score 7, 8, or 9. Now, the resources button that you're also looking at will give you an enormous amount of information on that, just like Y-Test will too. So we're going to go back here. We're going to click back to go back to the screen that you opened this up from. You're going to see when you open the next one up, you're going to open up the score sheet. Okay, we have a score sheet now here, and what we want to do is you want to be able to print out a score sheet that's blank, where it does not have the dots and brackets necessarily. It can have the dots and brackets if that's what you want. You can draw them in or you can do them in by pen, but you certainly don't have the person's X score sheet there. So what I'm saying to you is that you're working with a blank score sheet that doesn't have the X's on it or the person's score. It is optional whether you work with the dots and brackets or not. That's your call. But you want to be able to put one copy of that one copy of that score sheet in front of the person you're presenting it to, and you want to have the other copy in front of you, the one that's the real one. And what you want to do is say, what I'm going to do is take you through how Richard Schaefer has scored. And I want you to keep up with me, and I'm going to explain to you what his scores are and what they mean. First of all, Richard has scored a 7 mentally. Now, in the job of high ticket mutual fund sales, we found that those salespeople score a 4 through 7. Or in reality, they would score much higher than that. And Richard has scored a 7. So mentally, which is a measurement of how quickly someone learns and understands information, Richard has scored in the top 23% of the population. Now, where did I get those words? When I go back into resources on these buttons on the site, or when I go into Y-Test, or I go back in and I get to the interpretive manual, the printed interpretive manual for the Achiever, which I can print out from these sites, it said those are the words that are stated in the manual. That, and if I've read the manual in advance and looked at Richard's scores, I can say that Richard scored in the top 23% of the population mentally, so put an X under the 7. Now what I've done is caused the person that I'm presenting to put the X under the 7. I've got them participating in this act. The next thing I will say is that Richard scored a 6 in business terminology, which means he's above average. Average is 4 through 6. If we drew a vertical line through the 5, then those people, those scores above 5 or higher than 5s are average. Anything below 5 is below average. So consequently, Richard scored a 6 in his knowledge and use of business words, words like asset, debit, credit. In this kind of selling with mutual funds, that's obviously very important. And if we're using something with a benchmark, we can let them draw it in with the brackets or the dots, or you can have that already done. Then we talk about memory recall. Richard has scored an 8. Put an 8, put an X under the 8. And then we explain that memory recall is a measurement of how well someone keeps up with the world around them. He's obviously above average at the 8 level. Plain English vocabulary, what you learn in high school and college, but basically high school level, he scored a 6. Again, significantly above average. And a very good score for the job of mutual fund salesman. Numerical and perceptive ability, he scored an 8, which means he's accurate with numbers, which is ideal. Mechanical interest, a 5, which probably does not significantly relate to the job. Now, Mr. Brown, let me ask you, from what I've said about Richard Schaefer with these scores, do you feel like, with your knowledge of Richard, that they properly depict him? Now, what happens at that moment in time, what you've done is, and probably before that, you've gotten either some nonverbal feedback or you've gotten some verbal feedback, one or the other. But if you've gotten either kind of feedback, you've dealt with it. Either they're saying, yeah, 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 or, well, I'm not sure, and we have to talk about that. But the bottom line is, you haven't progressed any further than the 6 aptitudes before you clear the air and talk about any questions or issues and know that Mr. Brown agrees then with what you're saying about Richard Schaefer. Then we move into personality, and we highlight the fact, and our manuals, the interpretive manual, the Understanding the Achiever, the short guide, those manuals say that personality is a result of 3 factors and the behavior there too. 1, genetics, which is dictated obviously by your parents, and we're talking about your height, your bone structure, your color, that kind of thing. We're talking about biochemistry, what you're eating and drinking and how your body's functioning, and 3, your environment. Those things come together to create the personality dimensional scores and the resulting behavior that is experienced as a result of. So, and I'm doing some of this really probably a little too fast, but anyway, first score of Richard is a 4 in energy. Put an X under the 4. We get Mr. Brown to put an X under the 4. That means that Richard has a high degree of energy and drive to get things done. He's ideal in his energy and drive. The next measurement is flexibility. Now let's assume that I'm a novice at this and I don't know what these terms mean. That means I need to go into this site and find the interpretive manual and print it out and read it and study it, or take it with me, or find it and take it with me, or at least print out Understanding the Achiever, which is a short guide, so that I have it on my left-hand side so that I can look up what they mean until I have them memorized. The next measurement is flexibility. Flexibility used to be called character strength in the 60s. It was a measurement and still is the same measurement of honesty, reliability, and dependability. Now, a low score of a 1 or a 2 would be highly flexible and highly expedient, just like a 1 score or a 2 score in energy would mean that that person is hyper, restless, and tense, and has difficulty in focusing. But what we have here is Richard scored a 5 in flexibility. That means he's someone who believes in following the company procedures and guidelines, and who can be counted on to do what he says he's going to do. Now, Mr. Brown, does that depict Richard? Yes or no? Obviously, feedback again. Organization. Richard has scored a 2 in organization. He basically is naturally a fairly disorganized person. This means that, quite frankly, he's learned that with his mental ability, which is high, that he has the ability to react. But he's also someone who could benefit from some real training in leadership programs and how to become more organized in his daily life and his activities. We just happen to have one here with LMI that we can sell you for, Richard. I wouldn't use those words exactly, but now I think you're beginning to see where these two are going to come into play very well. We talk about communication. Now, but before we talk about communication, if you see where Richard scored lower than the norm in organization with that X score of his, that's a real significant flag waving right there that when Mr. Brown agrees that he is disorganized or he's seeing the disorganization in his work, that's just a really important signal, you know, to talk about. That's where we need to deal with a program that would cause him to become more organized if we have one. Now, we go into communication. We have an introvert, which is a reserved individual, versus an extrovert, who's highly interactive. Richard is a 7. Put an X down under the 7 for Richard on communication. That means he is very interactive in communicating with people, and that's very strong for him. Now, on the other hand, had he scored low in communication, the report itself would have recommended effective communication, for example, by Paul Meyer. That would be clicking right out in the report. Or it might also click out Module 3, Communications and Interpersonal Relations in the Telemetrics International program. So, what we're saying here is that achiever report that you've got in your hand is going to have some recommendations in it on what you can sell from LMI. So, now Mr. Brown, I've covered 4 of the personality dimensions. I've said that Richard's a 4 in energy. That means he has a lot of energy and drive. He's a 5 in flexibility, which means he's reliable and dependable. He's a little bit low in organization, quite a bit low, but there are things that can be done about that. And he's very good in interaction, talking with people. Mr. Brown, do you agree with what I've said? Do you see anything here that I've missed in these particular 3 or 4 areas regarding Richard? So I've paused here just to make sure that if Mr. Brown's got anything on his mind, that he's brought it up and we're going to talk about it now. The next measurement is emotional development, which is related to Freud's id, ego, and superego. The impatient person has a lack of ego problem. The person who's more in the middle of the range has a well-developed ego and very high ego. Here we have a situation where Richard is a 6, which in emotional development, which means he has a well-developed ego and can-do attitude. In assertiveness, the cooperative individual is on the left-hand side. The person who's very authoritative is on the right. Richard has scored an 8, which means he's a very authoritative individual. It means that he has the ability to close, he has the ability to get things done through people, and he's strong. Nobody's going to walk over him. Now, we move on into competitiveness. An individual may be a team player, which means that they want team or other individuals may want to be holistically oriented, where that person individually wins or loses. Richard has scored an 8, so he is basically fairly individualistically oriented, which is good in competitiveness, considering he's a mutual fund salesman. In mental toughness, psychological toughness, he's basically a more sensitive, tender-minded individual, which means that he can get his feelings hurt easily, he can get down a little bit, and sometimes, quite frankly, he wears his feelings a little bit too much on his shoulders. Then we move from there into questioning and probing. This is a measurement of somebody who's, they're low in this, a very trusting individual, versus high, a very skeptical individual who is always looking for motives in everything that people say and do around them. Richard scored a 6. So he's somebody who does a lot of good in probing. By the way, what do you think, Mr. Brown? Does that depict Richard? So again, we stopped after about 3 or 4 dimensions here to make sure that we have the questions addressed that the person may have that we're presenting to, or if there's anything that this person that we're presenting to is disagreeing with, now's the time to get it out and deal with it. Then we go into the final personality dimension, which is motivation. Motivation, a low score, is somebody who's very security motivated, that wanting to stay in a secure environment, not take changes, is depicted by the person who scores a 1, 2, 3 times a 4. A base or a draw plus some recognition and incentives would be the person who scores a 4, 5, or 6. The person who's very commission and incentive oriented is the scores a 7, 8, or a 9. That's recognition motivated. Richard has scored a 7, which means he's very, very recognition and incentive and commission oriented. Now, let's take a look at the overall Richard. We've covered 6 mental aptitudes and we've covered 10 personality dimensions. Mr. Brown, is there anything that I've presented to you that you disagree with? Okay, by now, there's not much of a chance there's going to be, because you've asked him enough times what he's had on his mind that should have come out. So we go on and say, we can take an overall look at Richard and say, we have a good candidate here for the job of mutual fund sales, but from the test results, and we have 2 validity scores here, distortion and equivocation. One of them, where we ask the questions again, but with different words, just to make sure he's been consistent with his answers. And then the second, equivocation, is a score that results from a person choosing from the alternates that were presented as to which best depicted that individual. When these scores in distortion and equivocation are within the 1 through 6 range, then this assessment is deemed to be about 90 to 92.6% accurate. When those scores exceed the 6 range, then that diminishes the accuracy. For example, had Richard scored a 7 in distortion, we would have had to decrease by 5 points that 90 to 92% accuracy score. Had he scored a pair of 7s, then we'd have to deduct 5 points and 5 points, or a total of 10 points, and say the accuracy is now down to about 80 to 82%. So every level above the 6th level costs 5% accuracy off of the evaluation of the results. So in this case, Mr. Brown, we believe our test results on Richard Schaefer are at least 90 to 92%. And had you asked us to assess Richard Schaefer before you hired him as a potential mutual fund salesman, we would have assessed him and recommended him. But we would have also said that you need to address these areas as far as training is concerned, his disorganization and his mental toughness. Those can be dealt with. Now, in reality, here with this particular pattern, we have one of those patterns that's an extremely strong pattern. most of your patterns, the bulk of them, are scored will not be this kind of strength. The more they are to the left of the 5 range, which is average, into the 4s and 3s, the more training recommendations or training program recommendations you're going to have. In the Achiever report, the following programs have been integrated: effective personal leadership, modeling the effective behaviors of achieving leaders, understanding effective management leadership, effective personal productivity, effective communication, module 3 of the telemetrics program, communication and interpersonal relationships, effective organizational leadership, effective supervisory management, and module 4 of the telemetrics program, work motivation. So what you have here is you have a total of some 9 LMI recommended training programs that have been directly related into the Achiever, which means that they're going to come out specifically recommended, the ones that are appropriate, specifically recommended for Richard Schaefer. What does this mean? Okay, if we have presented these Achiever results in the manner that I've shown you here with the person you're presenting them to, there's absolutely no question by the time you finish, you've gotten their participation and basically you've gotten their buy-in with those test results. You can dance on from there if you want into talking about the analysis of leadership strengths, which is the next section of the report, or sales if you ran that, or you could talk about the behaviorally oriented interview questions, or you can jump directly into these training and management suggestions. Now, if you've gotten buy-in that the Achiever or Sales Achiever test results or whatever product we're talking about here, whichever one, if you've got the buy-in that these results are accurate, then you're ready for the close. One close can be, can you see how this program would assist you in making better hiring decisions so that you can have this information on other applicants? Would you agree, Mr. Brown, that having this information on somebody you didn't know that you were considering for a job would be important to you? Yes. If you bought off with it on somebody you knew, you've got to buy off on it as being of value from somebody he doesn't know. So the bottom line is trial closed. One trial closed is, do you agree with the accuracy of the results? Do you agree that this depicts Richard? Do you agree that this would help you on candidates that you're thinking about hiring who you don't know? Do you agree that this information could assist you in training and managing Richard to become effective faster? Do you agree that since Richard works for you now, that it would be to your benefit to buy the program recommended here for Richard of effective personal productivity? It's just X number of dollars, and I can hand that to you, Mr. Brown, or however you go into that approach now of selling the respective LMI program. Only after you have presented the score sheet and gotten their agreement and moved on toward what you're trying to close and sell, only then is it time to even really get into showing the actual Achiever report that you may make available then to that particular company. So we've already gone through all of this before that report ever is available to be touched by Mr. Brown. Okay, I would like to, now that I've gone through this selling approach, which is obviously viable if you're trying to sell LMI programs to people that are already employed within an organization, it's just as viable to offer the employer the trial of the program on 2 people that they know to be using it in the selection process. And then obviously if the person is hired, you know where they, what their needs are from the LMI development programs, and to, you know, try to market them after the person is hired. But in any event, whether pre-employment or whether already employed, this is obviously the gateway to increase the LMI program sales to this particular employer. And you personally have gained credibility when the achiever results have been properly presented and the accuracy of them have been agreed to by the person you have presented to. So, you've established the accuracy of the instrument, you've established your credibility, and now the theory is, and the practice, is that you've prepared the stage to sell a development program. Okay, I want to throw the floor open for questions, or the telephone system open for questions. This is you, now your time.
Yeah, this is Linton Burks. I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
On the distortion, when you have 7, 8, and 9,
yes.
Is this similar to the old profile where it won't generate any benchmark if it distorts? And are we also to be led to believe that the personality dimensions in a distortion are then not valid if they hit 7, 8, and 9?
The thing about it is there's no reason not to generate a benchmark report because the distortion has nothing to do with the mental areas of the individual.
No, what I'm asking is this. In the present report, if it distorts, you can't get a benchmark.
Well, you should be able to get a benchmark because you really are simply looking at, and we produce a benchmark with the distortion or not, because it's really a matter of seeing how the person's scores are and realizing what degree of inaccuracy is. Now, obviously, in many cases, if the distortion is very strong, the person is suggested that they go back and retest. But, for example, a pair of sevens is only going to bring it down to 80 to 82%. There's no reason not to go ahead with those results. You know, if you had an 8, for example, and a 7, then you have dropped 15 points. So you're still talking about a 75% accuracy to 77, so you're three-quarters of the way there. My comment would be, you know, we do have a 25% degree of potential of inaccuracy here, but three-quarters of what I'm saying is going to be pretty well on target. The issue is, do you want to retest or do you want to go with what you have?
So you do believe in retesting if it distorts out?
If it's high enough. I wouldn't bother with retesting if I was within 15 points, meaning, but if I were over 15, which drops it down to 75%, then I would retest.
I don't want to hold the form here, but I just want to be clear on a particular question.
Not only
with the profile. If it distorts, you can only get a personality test. You can't get a benchmark.
You're going to get a benchmark with this.
You can get a benchmark even if it distorts.
You are going, yes, with a
pro. Okay.
You're going to get a benchmark.
Milt, this is Al Raffetto. Linton, are you on the line?
Hi, welcome. I'm glad that you're with us this morning.
I'm
back with LMI, and our program's a lot of years.
I'm with you, and I like what you're saying. Linton, the reason you couldn't get a report was that it was at the discretion of who ran the report, and they could fix it so that it would not generate a report, and you could also unfix it so that it would generate a report. So the software was always capable, and what Milt's saying is, why not run a report? Because we assume you're smart enough to do the right thing with the report once you have it.
Well, thank you. I didn't know that, Al.
Yeah. Milt, is that fair to say?
That's great, and thank you, Al. I really appreciate your comments. And you may have other comments. Please feel free to make them.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Al. I really do.
Okay. Well, I'll add my one, and then I'll shut up. And it's about A1, mental acuity.
Yes.
The very first time I met LMI people down in Austin, Texas, there was about 30 franchisees who came in who were using the profile. And a few of them were all steamed and up in arms because they had encountered the problem of going back to the president or CEO of a company and trying to explain why his A1 score was a 1 or a 2. And they just didn't like the notion that they were going to have to go in and, in their minds, call him stupid. And so they kind of said, well, all right, you know, you're the supposedly smart guy from the outside world. What do you do? And stuck me in the spot. I eventually came to tell them that it, A1 score really has very little to do with learning, but a lot more to do with how efficient anybody processes a particular kind of information. And that you're either really, really efficient, which is, of course, what you call fast learner, or you're really not very efficient. It takes you a lot of time to process information. And that sort of took the curse off of explaining a low A1 score. And I mention it to you because I know that there are LMI franchisees who encountered the problem and always were a little torqued if they didn't know how to handle that score.
Good point. Very
good.
That
makes sense?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Everybody?
Gilda, I have a question here.
Okay.
My name is Hermer Basic. When we initially went through the PES profiles, we were told to consider them profiles and not PIP. What's your feeling on that?
Oh, it's not a matter of feeling. It's a matter of the times. Depends on what decade we were in. When we were in the decade of the 60s, we didn't want them called tests because the word test at that moment in time had gotten such bad press because of the Wunderlich, right, predominantly in those cases. So we were trying to keep away from that in the 70s, and then the 80s got a little looser and the 90s got looser, and today you don't have the bad press over the word test that we were dealing with. Those cases have had enough decades since then to not really worry about it. The real true distinction is that this is an assessment as opposed to a test, because it assesses the overall person and you look at the overall assessment, whereas traditionally a test, you come up with a single score, a pass or fail score. So truly it is more appropriately addressed as an assessment. We just get a little sloppy these days because of the distance from the old quote testing suits.
Okay, one more question here. Recently I had a individual that took the PES that got a 9 on distortion, and it would not print out the profile on it. Will this print out the profile if it gets into a 9?
Yes.
It will, okay.
Yes, this will print out the benchmark regardless of what the scores are.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Period.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
On the profile, when we had a 6 distortion, if I'm remembering my numbers correctly, we had an 85% accuracy.
That would be inaccurate.
Oh.
What the words you're telling me are false. That would never have been the case in all of these years. 1 through 6 was always considered within the accuracy ranges, period.
I understand, but on the, was it the third page?
Yeah.
I forget the exact wording of the box.
Can I help?
Maybe Al will remember the exact terminology, but it would give a percentage of,
yeah.
I believe it was 85%.
Milk, she's referring to the concept of suitability or fit to the norm, not
accuracy. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah,
okay.
There you go.
Now that goes back.
No. I'm not talking about fit to the norm. Which
I know what you're talking about.
Or,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm talking about the box on the left side of the page as you were looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I can get one out to look at it.
No, you're on. I'm off.
Okay, but what was it called?
What was it called? The far left box. That should convert the V1 score to a percentage. So that's what she's talking about, Milk. Sorry about that.
Okay, what we have, which is, quote, actual through the years, is a 1 through 6 on distortion, or 1 through 6 on equivocation, when you're in both of those ranges in a 1 through 6, the accuracy level is 90 to 92.6%, period.
Okay, I'm looking at the frankness number. If we had a, well, even a 5 distortion at an 85% frankness level.
We never created a program that said that. Okay. Where that came from and who got in and tinkered around and came up with that, I have no earthly idea.
Okay, so erase it from our memories.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so then that leads me into, well, when you're running down the page, let's say we have somebody that we know is highly competitive.
Okay.
And yet they're saying they're the calmest person in the world, okay?
Competitiveness has nothing to do with calm or nervousness.
Well, maybe that wasn't the best example.
Okay.
Generally with that, I was thinking risk. I'm sorry, recognition.
Okay, we're talking now. We've got somebody that's high in recognition.
Right, and saying that they're highly calm.
That's logical. There's nothing illogical about that.
Mm-hmm. But let's just say that you're watching them tap their foot, and you know that they're not a calm person. In fact, once you talk to them more, they admit it, that they're not calm. They prefer to be out and around. Okay? How that...
be measured how calm they are, how restless they are, is measured on energy. So my question would be, what's their energy score?
Yes. But this is what I'm saying. The energy score is saying they're a 9, but you're watching them act like a 3.
Okay.
Okay. So, but we're saying that if we had 2 or 3 situations like that, where we're seeing visually and hearing from maybe their boss that they're different from this, and yet they're registering a 6 on their distortion, they're still, what did you say, at least 92% accurate?
That's right. The test is still 92% accurate, but in its best mode. Never lose sight of this. When we say in its best mode, it rolls a 90 to 92% accuracy, in its top accuracy. That means that we have a margin of error here for about 8 percentile. Now, if you, that's in essence close to 1 out of 10. So you've got 6 aptitudes and 10 dimensions here, which are a total of 16. So you can count on one of them, or possibly on some occasions as many as 2 of them, not being perfectly accurate. We have to remember the test is not, the assessment is not going to be 100% accurate. It's only going to be at best about 90 to 92.
Okay, in our reference material, where does it go over that information?
It would be in the interpretive manual. Again, somewhere in all of these materials here, the interpretive manual appears. I can't remember just which button it's under, but it is there, and it goes into that information.
Because the one that I just looked at under resources...
Okay, now we can tell you where the interpretive manual is. What did you click on, Richard?
Resources.
Resources, uh-huh, and then you can click on the interpretive manual. It's right there. And you can go to print with it.
Mel, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
To Linton Bergson, I'm a little confused on something here. If I understand you right, 1 through 6 is a 90 to 92% accuracy, correct?
Right.
Okay, so then if we go to 1, the very first digit 1, that's the same accuracy as 6? Wouldn't it go up exponentially?
No, that's just the range that people scored in to establish the 90 to 92% accuracy. You cannot draw come to the conclusion that a pair of ones is better than a 1 and a 5. There is no research to support that in any form or fashion.
So anything through 1 through 6 correlates to 92%
success. That's right. That's right, 90 to 92.6.
So if anybody would say, ask a question, then what's the difference between a 1 and a 2? There isn't any?
We're saying that those within the acceptable ranges, and we do not, there's no validation study done to establish any differential between a 1 or a 2 or a 3 or a 4 or that kind of stuff. There never has been, there never was.
So 1 through 6 is it?
Yes.
And the personality dimension is the same as the old profile. That is where the distortion is and not the mental attitude.
You're so right.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure. Okay. I have time for one more question. Okay. Let me just, as I wrap it up today, to say next week is Turkey Day, and we obviously won't have a session next Friday, so we will be missing next Friday. I also really, truly want to encourage you folks, as we come back after Thanksgiving, to start, you know, kind of directing us a little more. You know, like, be ready with questions you have so that we can address those questions for you. And I really want to encourage you to become more interactive and to bring questions to the table because, you know, this isn't just a learning experience. This is an experience of what we're trying to achieve, that we're trying to help you your marketing and sales and your client base and your dollar revenue. So please keep that in mind, and when you come back 2 weeks from today, let's be prepared with anything we can do to help you do that.
Thank you very much.
With that said, I'd like to thank each of you for participating today, and I'd certainly like to thank you, Al, for your comments and being here today.
You're welcome.
And everybody have a great day and a super weekend.